Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the Juan Galt Show. Today, we'll be talking to Sergey, the founder of BitRefill, about living on a Bitcoin standard. Sergey, how are you doing?
I'm good. Can you hear me?
Yes, can hear you loud and clear. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yes, I'd love to hear more about your backstory with BitRefill and how you guys got started.
We got started soon, gonna be 10 years, 9.5 years ago. Hey, this Bitcoin thing is interesting. Yeah, let's do something with it. Yeah, see what's what. Sort of, at the time, I was reading a lot of content from the dark side of toxic gang that we're talking about, how all of these noobs are showing up, starting companies and getting hacked and robbed and all of that. And I was like, yeah, well, let's do something limited in scale to see if we get hacked and robbed and so on. The first version of BitRefill I hacked together myself over the summer in 2014 to learn node programming, then it was just a website for topping up prepaid phones, right? And we got some good initial traction with orders coming in from all kinds of parts of the world, and I kind of on a YOLO applied to one accelerator and then another one and got into the one that's called Boost in Silicon Valley, and sort of from there we got the first capital. We got Tim Draper on the cap table, and from then on it's been a journey of building, listening to customers and building what they need, and the people that that use Bitcoin as money on a day-to-day basis. Even though the things that we focus on have changed, I think we've always had the same North Star, which is enabling the Bitcoin dream. The dream of internet money, a world where money behaves the same way as everything else does on the internet. And end of the day, what kind of a shit internet money is it we're building here if you can't buy stuff with it? Right. And so I think that's what we're trying to achieve. I think even though those specific things vary over the years.
Hello, Sergey. Good to have you.
Hey, man.
Man, how are you?
No. I had it scheduled for an hour later. So I just, that was my bad, I guess. But all is good. So did you start BitRefill with Bitcoin in mind? I always thought that BitRefill was sort of a gift card company. And then you guys got into Bitcoin.
No, it was, it was, like the name implies, Bit and Refill. Like,
of course,
for creativity than that, it was Bitcoin for Refill website. Yeah, you can look at it from the Internet Archive. Like, the original Bit Refill was like a salmon shape of pink, shade of pink, that they got from a $12 bootstrap theme on some Indian website that I hacked together with. An API for phone refills, actually using BitPay at the time for processing Bitcoin payments, and that was the MVP version of it.
That's awesome. It's great to have you. I mean, I think BitRefill has become a kind of a staple of the Bitcoin economy at this point. The amount of times that BitRefill has saved me from some, either bureaucratic thing I gotta run through to go get a new SIM card or solve some real problem for me and other people that I know is have a lot of stories now that I'm collecting about it. As I like to tell people, I met a guy that bought a fridge through BitRefill. It's pretty great.
And was this that situation in which he had recently bought a large amount of ice cream melting?
It was an emergency spring purchase. Yeah. So you know, I think that there's real utility in this company you built. I mean, one of the questions that I have for you is, you know, a few years ago you gave a speech at a conference about the Lightning Network and about sort of the reality of the Lightning Network at the time. And I remember that it was sort of very impactful for the community, right? There was kind of like somewhat of a shock. It was kind of controversial, but it was like very humbling. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And maybe like reflecting on it now, like how are you seeing the Bitcoin economy today, you know, years later?
It's not even 2 years since that talk, so it's not that long ago. And I did this summer in the same conference. So the talk, for those who haven't seen it, you can search on YouTube for Sergey and Pizza Day talk. It was from the Pizza Day conference in Prague. I gave an updated talk that got less attention this year. And so I have reflected, like some of the things that I guess just a short summary was that, you know, he was then talking about the things that we've noticed is that, you know, the people who use Bitcoin as a thing and the people who like to talk about Bitcoin or who have invested in Bitcoin or go to conferences about Bitcoin, that these groups overlap much less than one might think at first glance, right? Yeah, and so, for example, I presented a bunch of stats showing this dynamic. For just, for example, that we at Bitrefill get, you know, we get more sales volume with Litecoin than we do with the Lightning Network, right? Which to most Bitcoin enthusiasts sounds counterintuitive, given how much talk there is about Lightning and how much work goes into it, and how little talk there is about Litecoin.
That's it. That's really.
That is, I mean, like they're roughly neck and neck, and I think like one of the things that maybe, like in hindsight, is maybe slightly unfair with that is that I think like a lot of, for example, if you exchange your coins on, you know, if you're dumping your Bitcoin gold, for example, and you want to exchange them on one of these Shapeshift type websites, maybe they don't have Lightning, but they do have Litecoin, for example, and things like that, right? So in the end, something like Litecoin also ends up aggregating a lot of traffic for, let's say, the rest of crypto, right? On the other hand, I think it would have been desirable if Lightning, the Lightning Network, did that as well, right? So it's not entirely unfair either. It's somewhere on the spectrum,
Right.
So, I think that, I mean, in recent times it's gotten more popular for people to start shitting on Lightning. Lightning and critiquing it and so on, as if it, you know, didn't magically solve all of the problems that we have. And you know, contrarian as I am, then I'm like, okay, well now I guess maybe it's time for me to get back to defending Lightning. I don't know, like the truth is nuanced. In our social media landscape, people can only handle one message, and that message can either be that Lightning is the Messiah and everything is great, and if you don't like it, you can burn in hell. Or when it switches, then it's like, Lightning is shit, nobody's using it, everything sucks. Like, well, you know, the reality is somewhere in the middle. Lightning is incredibly useful for a lot of people, for a lot of use cases. It's not perfectly solving all of the problems for all of the use cases and all of the people all of the time. It's somewhere in the middle, progressing at a good pace, and frankly, I think it's a good thing that we're now discussing some of the limitations and shortcomings and difficulties with Lightning and so on. I think fundamentally, the thing that I think still hasn't really stuck from my talk is that my main point is like that talk was zero about tech, right? It was not about some tech properties or this and that and cost of block space or anything. It was more about like marketing aspect of, that we need to market Lightning or Bitcoin to the people that might use it. For whatever definition of the word use one might have. And so if we don't, like if we, for example, market things like Lightning to people who are not interested in making transactions with Bitcoin, we shouldn't be so surprised they aren't generating so many transactions. But and on the contrary, we want to market something like Lightning to people. Do make transactions with Bitcoin? Well, okay, but then maybe we can't, wrap it in this thick layer of all of the different values of Bitcoin maximalism that one needs to ascribe to in order to use this thing. And that realization is still thing hasn't really fully landed yet in, let's say, in the sort of podcast and conference circuit of the Bitcoin ecosystem. It has landed better in parts, at least, of the entrepreneurial ecosystem, but not entirely. It gets different when you travel to conferences, for example, and you meet all of your old friends there and so on, and you can bathe in a certain environment. It becomes very difficult to be mindful of the fact that it is completely not unrepresentative of your user base, even though some of your users are there. Many others of your users are not. And that's still, I think, a difficult thing. It's a function of the fact that Bitcoin is more than just a tool. It's a passion project, right? It's a movement. It's also an investment. And all of these things cloud people's minds, which is another reason why I really like things like Litecoin or stablecoins, things that, most of us wouldn't travel halfway across the world for conference about Litecoin or about stablecoins. And yet these things are widely used by millions of people that use them in order to achieve some kind of goal that is their business or some kind of financial empowerment. It becomes very telling because when you're like, okay, but let's find some Bitcoin users, like where do you go? Where do you find them? Like, do you go to Bitcoin Madeira? No, there's like there. Do you go to ETH Denver? No, they're not going to be there either, right? And so, where do you find the Litecoin users? Well, maybe they don't go to conferences. Oh shit! Okay, then how do we find them? Well, maybe after run some campaign on it, to get out of this a community mindset of finding users. Yes, yeah, that makes sense.
Please ask. Yes. Okay, so no, I agree. I think there is a sort of, this idea that everybody is going to become a Bitcoin maximalist if we just, if we just maxi it hard enough, if we just convince or tweet hard enough, right? And, I don't really believe that that's how it's going to work out either. Like, I think, and the ETFs really show that, right? Like, we're seeing huge adoption of sorts, right? Like, how many people are getting into Bitcoin of sorts, so to speak, right? How many people are getting exposed to Bitcoin, maybe learning about Bitcoin through an ETF where they're just getting this completely synthetic and wrapped up thing that just gives them the upside and the downside too, I'm sure, but they're that's the ability for them, right?
Well, absolutely it is. And I mean, you know, there's been a lot of discussion lately about, like, you know, Michael Saylor said, Bitcoin is not internet money, it's a digital property, right? Some people that are in, I guess, similar camp as me give a shit for that. But like, I think we have to be mindful of the fact that now with the ETF, for example, like there is definitely a growth in Bitcoin as an asset, as something that you invest in, you know, a penny stock, a shit coin, and that does not necessarily lead to growth of Bitcoin as internet money. Like there is growth. Don't get me wrong. Like, and we are now back on the setting all-time highs track. It's recent, but we're not growing as much as the market cap of Bitcoin is growing during bull markets, right? We also don't shrink as much during bear market. I mean, they have a certain point, but I think that, like, you know, it's the nature of Bitcoin is that there are these very different visions around it, and that's okay. I think they're all useful because at the end of the day, they are much more interdependent than people think in a simplistic view. Like, you know, your internet money, like if all Bitcoin sits in ETFs, then Bitcoin kind of loses all of the points of it, right? Then it doesn't really add anything over gold. On the contrary, like you can't use Bitcoin as internet money to buy stuff unless somebody wants to hold the Bitcoins that you are selling at the time that you're buying a gift card for a weekend somewhere or something. So, like, these things are mutually interdependent, much more than people realize. But yeah, it makes it difficult to know, like, where to talk to market. Like, you know, the question of, like, well, which wallet does Michael Saylor use? For example, right? If you just, like, picture it, like, I don't know, but I would guess that, you know, he doesn't carry around so much Bitcoin in his pocket, right? And probably not buying stuff on a regular basis. And that's okay. It's his right to do so. But yeah, that means that sort of his audience is not going to be our audience, right? So we need to find our audience. And then they're going to be something else. And again, things like, I mean, recently the growth of stablecoins, I think, is a great example of that. And, like, if you talk to any of the people that are traveling the world in emerging countries and exploring the different P2P economies and so on, and they all say that, you know, stablecoins are bigger than Bitcoin, and so, like, personally, I think it's a little bit disappointing because I came for Bitcoin and not for, like, IOUs from some private company. But on the other hand, there is something, like, pragmatically understandable with it as well, and the fact that people that do use stablecoins are, again, they're not ideologically driven in the same way. They don't go to conferences about it and so on. They don't fight with friends about some technical property of it. That makes them sort of more useful, I think, for user research and for building products that realize the dream of money that moves over the internet in the same way that that messages.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely different user groups, and it would be really sad if all of Bitcoin and all of Bitcoin usage ended up just through ETFs, you know, like that would certainly be tragic, and it would probably change, you know, like Bitcoin, you know, be Bitcoin's sort of fate of sorts, right? I don't know if it would exactly kill it, but it probably would, you know, like it might, right? And then on the other hand, so I mean, I have this idea that I've been, I don't know, just like a vision of sorts, you know, not to get too esoteric, but like that, you know, we were having this conversation with Tone Bass and Simon Dixon, and Jeff Ross was there. And Jeff was saying that he feels like we're in this new era of Bitcoin where, you know, we don't really like the marketing that's being done by the ETF people, right? And by these sort of big corporations now is at such a high level, right? Obviously to get people to buy Bitcoin in the ETF, right? It's such a like professional level marketing that he feels like his job is to sort of some degree done, and he feels like unsure what his job is now as sort of like unpaid marketing staff for Bitcoin, right? And my thinking there has been for a while that our job as like the people that really believe in Bitcoin, right? Because there's the people that are buying it for the price. There's the people that are using it for utility and don't go to the conferences. And then there's us that go to the conferences, right? And our job is actually to keep a big hole on the walled garden of, you know, what be it the ETFs or Wall Street or the exchanges. Keep a big hole there. Make sure that people can get in and out, especially out, and that they can keep using Bitcoin, right? And that they can keep use it in the way that we know it, we can use it, you know, so that they don't forget, right? So that's just a little rant that I like to kind of remind people of every once in a while. But how do you see it? Like, you've been in this space for a long time, right? Now, like how do you see where we're at today? Like, do you and well, anyway, any thoughts on that before we continue?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. I feel like we can maybe you covered this thing, but yeah, like, you know, I think that the people that are getting an ETF right now are not, you know, installing a wallet, signing transactions, doing any of the things that I think is what drives me to these things. And at the same time, they are definitely creating purchasing power for the people that did get a wallet sometime back and so on. So I don't know. Like, in the end, I think we've learned a lot of things in the past few years. I think one big thing that I learned was that if you had asked me some years back, even like 3 or 4 years back, I would have said, you know, the argument for why Bitcoin will win over all other cryptocurrencies is network effects, right? And at that time, you would have that 90-95% of all commercial activity with internet money of whatever kind was happening with Bitcoin. And so in that world, it just makes sense that something like money would needlessly kind of land, you know, we're throwing around words like shelling points and network effects and Metcalfe's law and things like that. Things that we don't hear about so much in the Bitcoin these days. Whereas today we've seen that no, in fact, the network effects of Bitcoin were successfully competed with by things that, you know, things like stable coins on Ethereum type chains, like, you know, Tether on Tron. Like, who would have thought that? Yeah, that would be a massive way of using internet money in some years. We're seeing that, like, the crypto economy has definitely moved beyond a world where all crypto was like denominated in Bitcoin, purchased with Bitcoin, tried to make itself appear to be similar to Bitcoin in every sense of the world. And nowadays, the crypto world has built something that is entirely different still built on some similar technologies as Bitcoin, but has moved quite a bit out from the Bitcoin world in terms of both culture, but also the tools and things that people use and so on. Yeah, and so at the end of the day, now we're at the point where Bitcoin still the largest cryptocurrency out there, just not larger by orders of magnitude. And so there is no, at the moment at least, I think evidence is that the network effects of Bitcoin, in the sense of an internet money that you can use to buy stuff, that those network effects are being successfully competed with, for example. I think that's a big big takeaway, and that the things that, like, if you look at things that are successfully competing with Bitcoin, well, stable coins, their main feature is that they are stable, right?
Yeah.
Then there's things like, well, Monero seems to have a vibrant ecosystem as well, where you have privacy and all of these things. So there are things that can successfully compete with Bitcoin. On the other hand, you know, if you want to be the Bitcoiner ETF maximalist, there is only one cryptocurrency that has an ETF, it is currently growing faster than all of the others. And so, who the hell knows, right?
So, do you think? Well, do you think that this is like something that's a mistake we've made along the way? Like, is this a sort of a failure of, let's say, the Bitcoin community, some degree, to get Bitcoin to be useful, or is it as a money? I mean, it is useful, but like used more likely, or is it, because to me, like, I think people just, it's that sort of unit bias of the dollar, right? That really makes the Tether, you know, relevant at all, right? Like, Tether has, yeah. So, you know, what is there anything we could do? Because, like, I think the narrative within the Bitcoin, let's say, maxi world, is that, you know, you don't get unit of account, and you don't get, you know, the sort of stable currency aspect until Bitcoin's price is so high that it's sort of, not, you know, that it's worth spending, right? That, you know, it's hard to buy Bitcoin, and it might go up a lot, so why spend it? I'd rather spend my dirty fiat, right?
Sure. I think so. There's a lot here. The question is there something we could have done? Well, no. I think in the end, something like a stablecoin in a world where those are well functioning and legal and not getting shut down, will find an audience, and I'm not that surprised that audience is bigger than that of Bitcoin. I think, on the other hand, Bitcoin could have been much further along. The way that Bitcoin maximalism evolved, and it has evolved quite a lot in the past, 7 or so years from the block size wars today, it's more defined by all of the things that you should not do and think you should not interact with, right? And that is contradictory to me.
That's so
true. If you are, like, Bitcoin is the money for enemies, the number one thing that people want to buy with Bitcoin is shitcoins. And then we, like, nope, you must not pay shitcoins, so we should make it impossible to do so. And then, let's see who wants to use our technology, right? Ask Lightning advocates, it's like, what's the name of a good Lightning wallet that also lets you set from? Like, a simple right?
Aqua is the only one that actually lets you do it. And then that one's like a month old. Yeah. No, it's got Tether on Tron, Tether on Liquid, Tether on Ethereum. Yeah. No, they're pushing the line. They're pushing the bar. Yeah.
I have to check it out. Is that
Aqua
wallet as used to be Blockstream's Aqua wallet?
No. This is well. I think the brand was maybe bought out by Samsung, and when he left or something like that. I'm not exactly sure on the details. So it's the same brand, but yeah, it's been built independently from Blockstream. But as independently as you know, as like they're still you know, it's probably the same talent, right? So, yeah.
So I'm clicking it now, and I'm getting a 404 page from Blocks.
Oh, it's an
Aqua Wallet, I think.
aquawallet.io. It's aquawallet.io, I think, the website. Yeah.
Anyways,
No.
interesting. That.
Well, I mean, I think
Thank
it's a
you.
good topic, because I think the reason why I like this wallet is that, now I'll tweet it out. Maybe Robbie can help us get a little link out there for this wallet. And just FYI, like I did like a production ad for them, in Latin America. Yeah, I'm not getting paid by them or anything, but you know, the wallet is useful, right? Because again, you can move Tether, right? And people recognize the dollar, but they also like Bitcoin. Like everybody that I talk to now is like, oh yeah, Bitcoin, you know, it's going up, right? Like they like it as a savings technology, but you know, I think Tether has definitely captured an audience, right? And especially in Latin America. You know, I think I saw some statistics that of all the people that use crypto in Colombia, 70% of them are using Tether, 20-something percent are using Bitcoin, and the rest are like Ethereum and like the other stuff, right? And of those, and that's like of 4 million Colombians out of 50 million Colombians, so it's, you know, 10% of the country is in crypto, and most of them are on Tether. And you know, so Tether is useful for people because you know, it's understandable. But oh, if all you have is some Tether wallet, which I don't know, do they even exist? Like you either have a Tether wallet and 50 shitcoins, or you have a Tether wallet in Bitcoin, which is what this wallet is doing. So I mean, it's kind of walking that maxi line. Go ahead. Yeah, did you get it? You trying it out?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could try it later. I mean, I think it's pretty good, but anyways, you were saying something about like how you know, and I think you're right. Like Bitcoin maximalism used to be like the Bitcoin ecosystem, the inner Bitcoin system used to be a lot more funner, but a lot more chaotic, right? A lot more trolly outwardly. And I think we do. There's a lot of trolling internally, and like we're, you know, like we make fun of Craig Wright all the time, and right, like anybody that peeks their head and says something stupid, they'll get made fun of. But it doesn't seem as much fun as it used to be in some sense, right? Like, and I think the reality is, yeah, most people come here and they want to buy JPEGs and they want to flip shit coins, you know, and that's kind of how they come in, and then what they see is a bunch of, you know, laser-eyed orange pill people that are like telling them that it's bad and they're bad for doing it, right? And like that's not a great welcoming committee, you know. Is that kind of how you're seeing it?
I guess, I don't know, like, in the end, again, like, for me, these things are kind of different, like, in terms of the community aspect of who you want to hang out with is something that is different from who is using a certain technology, we still use dollars and euros, and we don't go to conferences, and we don't have, our Euro friend that we talk about euros with, and so on. And so I think that it's not necessarily the case that the degen crypto economy is either what will lead to massive growth of long-term growth, internet money as a thing, right? Rather it is, to a large extent building it. Decentralized, I guess, Ponzi or pyramid type scheme, where people bounce these tokens back and forth and then hope to sell them at a premium while having fun. In the same way, it does. Casino is fun. You're probably lose money. Yeah. Like, I don't know if that gets us there either.
Yeah.
It does, however, help create a lot of utilities that are useful. Such as stable coins. Like, we should be mindful that that's where stable coins came from. They didn't come from Bitcoin maximalism. They didn't come from something else. They did come from like the crypto shitcoin economy, and have ended up being quite useful for a lot of other things. Yeah, and so, like, to me, it's not about necessarily the culture. I think that deep down, all of these things are just things, and the communities are just communities. I think that talking about these things is useful for the community to be mindful of its own biases, so as to better interact with the thing as a thing, and not as the community would like the thing to be, how the thing is.
Yeah, I mean, I think, there's this dilemma too, right? Because there's a lot of people that are very happy with the price going up, right? And then there's this sort of the side of Bitcoin that, wants the blocks to always be full because they're concerned about miner subsidy, right? And then there's people that actually do want to spend it and are trying to keep the blocks empty, right? And they're trying to scale the use of Bitcoin, like pure Bitcoin, right? Be it on chain or through Lightning, right? And, I think there is somewhat of a risk that if we just get comfortable with the price going up and with all these sort of other ways of using Bitcoin, let's say, like, we're going to get some Bitcoin debit cards at some point that work, right? I think there's one that's the Wirex is still in the game, but there's going to be, like if we're always using some wrapped Bitcoin on some upper layer that isn't really having an impact on Bitcoin, then like, and where we don't have self-custody and where it isn't, I don't know. I think I'm struggling to phrase the question, but I guess, let me pivot to this. How are you seeing the new technologies that are being sort of explored, right? Like something like eCash and the sort of e-tokens, do you think they'll help adoption, right? Are they interesting to you, but do you see them as like a toy, or where do you think Bitcoin needs to go to maybe continue to keep that cyberpunk sort of internet money thing that I think you and I are both interested in?
Yeah, well, I mean, to be honest, I've paid less attention to the developments of technology in the last year or two. I've tried out eCash and it tends to work. End of the day, same as how the main problem with Lightning is not technological. I think the main question with all of these things is whether or not we can practice them in a way that people will use. End of the day is things that, like, well, custodial, some custodial, like most of these eCash things are, or something else. It can be great tools. But the question is, like, for example, like if you look at, so here's a concrete example. Look at El Salvador, right? Where you have a government that is friendly to Bitcoin. You have a couple of different wallets that use Bitcoin in different ways. The largest one being the government one, but also prominent private wallets that are mainly of the centralized kind, such as the Blink wallet, Trike, so on. We have custodial wallets. No one's cracking down upon them. None of them are exit scamming people or anything like that. From like a technical or system standpoint, things are mostly working, right? And so then you jump onto the street in San Salvador and try to pay at the store with Bitcoin with either of these wallets or whatever. the reason why you will not be able to do that in most cases, not technological, right? It's not that these apps are lacking certain functionality or other. It is a question of finding what things, what people need, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, like, my model for the growth of these things, like, at the same time, like, we shouldn't also not be like, sometimes I notice myself sounding a little bit negative talking about these things, but the reality is that, like, the internet money version of Bitcoin is growing quite rapidly, maybe growing less than the ETF version of Bitcoin, but it's still growing. And I think that it's going to follow a trajectory that is most similar to how, for example, VPN technology spread across the world, right? And VPN is this interesting piece of tech that most people have used at some point. According to statistics, like, a third of the internet population is using a VPN service, which is like 1 billion people, right? It's a read somewhere there's a $40 billion per year market, or was some years back, and so at the same time, it, you know, how it grew there without much hype, without community, without influencers. It's just a useful piece of tech that gives people certain freedoms, and the main thing that people do with these freedoms is, you know, to watch Netflix from a different country or watch a board game that isn't shown where you're physically located or something like that, which is, you know, basically censorship resistance, and in Bitcoin terms. And the way that VPN has grown is, well, on a global level, it's like nice and steady growth. And then on a regional level, there are spikes. Like, there are things that happen that, you know, makes VPN usage, like, Turkey implements some draconian law, and suddenly VPN usage goes from 10% to 80% in that country, right? And so, like, if you look globally, then, like, a bunch of these things kind of add up. And so here we are after 20-something years of VPN, we have a third of the internet population using the regularly, and it's not, you know, there was never any hype, no venture capital, no, you know, we don't have a Mark Zuckerberg of VPNs that travels conferences to tell his story about how he built the big VPN company. We have a bunch of different VPN companies, and they all kind of differ from each other, just mainly by marketing, I guess. But we have it, right? And so I think that we're seeing similar growth with internet money, both when it comes to Bitcoin or stable coins. That, yeah, well, you know, some country cracks down on the currency and something happens, and then people shift to these things to some extent, much more than before, but still not from 0 to 100. I'll tell you the most recent story that we had. We had a funny spike in sales in Argentina in the last week. Mainly they were buying Steam codes via popular Lightning wallet, like exchange wallet called Belo. It all happened because someone tweeted out that, well, okay, backstory is that there is, from what I understand at least, part of the new financial regime is that there's a 35% tax, I guess, or a FX surcharge when buying things from abroad, such as Steam games. And somebody discovered that you can buy these Steam gift cards and Bitrefill over Lightning with this app, shared it on Twitter, and it went kind of viral, and now we have, like, thousands of people that are in Argentina using Bitcoin and Lightning for the first time, specifically to save 30% of on their game, right? Like that thing on its own is like it will not last, right? It's going to be there for a month or so, and then something else is going to happen. And these things normalize, but like over the years, there's like thousands of incidents and episodes of that that teach a lot of people that okay, well, here's this Bitcoin thing, and I can use it to this and that, and so it is growing in a good way in that sense. And so we are seeing the VPN like growth is just, I think, frustrating for us, for those of us who are in the fray, and not just simply selling Bitcoins to people to see that. Yeah, well, just selling Bitcoins can also be a very, very profitable. Yeah, if you're offering people, you can become rich here, and that's, of course, a stronger value proposition than just, hey, freedom and empowerment and all those things.
Yeah, I think what people maybe often don't realize is that you can actually often save quite a bit of money by using Bitrefill to purchase things. Because of the sort of the directness of the deal, right? Like you're not going through certain intermediaries. If you are a Bitcoiner, you don't have to go sell your Bitcoin for fiat and pay a commission and then move it through the banking system and then pay with a credit card, right? Like it's actually going direct in a much more direct path. And I personally use Bitrefill to buy Steam gift cards many times throughout the years. I'm guessing that's going to continue. I'm a little bit shocked to hear that. So Milei is taxing import goods at 30%, like video games. Is that the idea there?
I think, yeah, and I don't think it's necessarily. I don't know.
Some weird import thing. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if it's tax or if it's just. Like FX,
right? Like an Oryx.
I think the intent is that this should not happen for long term. But
gotcha.
In the turmoil, which is
right. So it's solving a monetary problem for people right now, while there's some great fiat disruption in their pocket of the world. That's a cool story, though. Is there any other stories like that you think are kind of instructive?
That's a good question. I don't know. I was I was at the Madeira conference last week, and I was talking to a guy that's working on building the circular economy in Lebanon. Right, and we had a discussion, and Lebanon is like also one of those like. Perfect case. Like, the currency is going to hell, turmoil. So, the banking system is kind of oppressive. You're showing up with guns at banks just to get their own money out, stuff like that, right? So there's like a vibrant expat community, remittances flowing, all of these things. Kind of educated population. And so, Bitcoin should be taking off there, right? And so it was talking, like, well, how much are you actually seeing? It's like, more Tether than Bitcoin, but Tether 2 is not as much as I would have liked it, right? And so I think that, that is where we are with these things. And so we do need to, I think, make the tech easier to use. Mainly, I guess, make sure that all of our things are interoperable with each other. I think that's like my main beef with the Bitcoin maximalist these days, is that the idea that Bitcoin should not be interoperable with the other internet money systems out there. Yeah, which I think is a big mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm tending to agree with you on that as well. Like there's sort of one of the meme wars within Twitter has been, the Bitcoin maximalist, like the Bitcoin monetary maximalist versus the Bitcoin platform maximalist, right? There's a lot of different memes to describe these two camps, but the idea is, like Bitcoin as a platform, as the internet money, that should be kind of like the base money protocol for everything else that's going to be on top, you know, including casinos and JPEGs and, you know, stable coins, et cetera, et cetera. And that was the vision that I was also sold in the early days, right? I think that's what a lot of people don't understand or don't, you know, maybe are not aware of, is like, this was the vision, at least in my early, like in part of my journey in this industry, was like, yeah, we're going to become the money protocol of the internet, and you're going to be able to buy anything you want with Bitcoin. But, excuse me. And then what we have today is sort of this weird kind of segregated market where we have, you know, like the Liquid network is, you know, I guess gaining some adoption recently, but it's like there's no exchanges that support it. Like, it's like almost on, like, to me, like the Liquid network won't be relevant until it's on Binance, because everybody else is on Binance, right? And so it's really actually difficult to go in and benefit from Liquid if you can't go flip it on Binance at a good price. You're going to be paying, you know, 1 to 5% to flip it, you know, all the way up to 10 grand and such. So anyway, I think, I tend to agree. I think we need to like break down any barriers to use Bitcoin in whatever ways people want to use it. But then there's this sort of financial literacy dimension of it, right? Which is like, no, you should actually save your Bitcoin, right? And that's that whole narrative from Saylor, right? Like, you know, don't spend your Bitcoin, you know, you never sell your Bitcoin, you know, like go take a loan on it and spend your fiat, you know, and like, you don't sell a pristine collateral, you know, perfect asset that's always, you know, that could continue to go up forever into infinity. Why would you sell that? It's ridiculous, right? And that argument is very compelling for people, especially when Bitcoin as a currency keeps struggling to compete with Tether, right? Like, even in this Lebanon example, we're running into this Tether question, right? So, I don't know. I mean, is there maybe some realities of the market that we just need to accept here? Like, maybe we are just in that sort of interim, you know, period. And,
well, I mean, someone who said that you should never sell your Bitcoin is somebody who clearly is not all in on Bitcoin, right? Because if you are all in, you kind of need to sell Bitcoin to do it. Not that I'm saying that you should or have to be all in Bitcoin. Yeah, just that, like, to people that are, for whom the current system solves all of their needs. For them, what is interesting in Bitcoin is value appreciation. Right. So then we would say things like that. I think that's fine. Like, we just need to understand what's what. Like, I think that the meta discussions of these things end up a little bit like, okay, here's another example. So Jack Dorsey announced their BitKey wallet the other day, which is a new hardware wallet from Square, and it's now available for sale. You can buy it with a credit card payment or Stripe. And then somebody on Twitter asked, "Yeah, can I buy it with Bitcoin?" And Jack Dorsey answers, "Well, save your Bitcoins." Wait. And so, like, let's unpack that whole thing. Like, the point is that the people that are buying the hardware wallet are not people that are transacting with Bitcoin, right? So, like, he's done his market research, right? The people that are buying it are, you know, well banked. They'll use Bitcoin as an investment vehicle only. So he's not losing any customers, because he's targeting it to a different demographic. As it, it's right to it, but it does kind of, from a cultural vibe, it's like, it's a bit of shame, right? We can also sit here and be like, come on, right? You kind of have to sell it with Bitcoin, even if not everyone use that option, right?
Yeah, that's pretty lame. But if it makes sense business-wise, you know? Go on.
Yeah, exactly. So at the same time, like, there's the other side of it, which is like, for example, like, well, people that are not looking to invest in Bitcoin because they are not looking to invest because they are struggling to make ends meet. A lot of people in the world, you know, to them, you can tell them how many times you want to, that you should never sell your Bitcoin. And it's like, it doesn't affect anything, right? Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I think that, like, what things are is more important than what it said.
Yeah.
In our space. And so Bitcoin is a thing. And if people like it for whatever reason, then that's great. For me, the interesting thing is that it's a tool that can empower people to do things with their financial life. So,
yeah, I think that's actually a really, really important point. You know, for people that that are wealthy already, that are, let's say, really good at money, or they're just really lucky and they come from a wealthy family, or, you know, they got to go to the big schools or whatever, right? Like the elite of the world, the upper middle class of the world, they don't need to spend Bitcoin. You know, they really don't need it. To them, it's a toy. It's a hedge. It's another investment class. It's another way of, like, you know, lowering the impact of inflation on their bottom line, right? And that's fine. You know, that's a use case. But then the people that actually, I think the rest of the world, right, actually does struggle saving money, right? It is a, you know, it's a serious effort that they have to put into it to buy Bitcoin and accumulate it over time. And then if when they need to spend it, when they actually need to buy something, it's hard to sell it or hard to spend it, then that kind of like weakens the argument, right? And so it should be yeah, really easy to spend, you know,
even if, which, by the way, sorry for interrupting, but like in the olden days, I remember Mark Andreessen, I think, that said that in the end, the libertarians will be disappointed with Bitcoin. Like, I remember that quote very, very clearly, because I'm like, I did not see how that would happen. And now we can kind of see it happen.
Yeah. I mean, the libertarians, that's an interesting question, because I was like in the heart of libertarianism to some degree when I, you know, like a few years ago. And what I saw was all the libertarians became, you know, they basically went to everything else except Bitcoin. They went to like a lot of the academics didn't get it and still don't get it, like, or they pay lip service to it, but they didn't really even understand it, you know, and today they're still hesitant about it. But I guess we are libertarians, right? Like the Bitcoin community is libertarian, or are we like a little bit different? You know, it seems to me like there's kind of a conservatism within the,
we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we are a little bit. We are inclined to kind of extreme belief in a thing, which is known to everybody in the world, but we believe in it more. Right? And that's our secret, is that they don't know how great it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But we do, and that's what is our common property.
So we're the guy in the corner of the party being like, you know, you guys don't understand how much I think Bitcoin is awesome. And then I guess they're like, yeah, you won't shut the fuck up about it. Yeah.
They're making out with other party goers while we're hanging out here. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, In the end, like today, reading like if you open the Bitcoin white paper and you read the news about Bitcoin, it's like it's very interesting that's how it, you know, it evolved, how like the peer to peer electronic cash system has become this hedge currency that is not a currency but an asset that is not actually anything, but you could transfer it over the internet. Like all of that stuff. I don't know. It's interesting. But the other thing, like, I don't know. You know, are more people than ever using cryptographic signatures transfer money over the internet? Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the thing that matters.
Yeah.
I think everything else is like nuance, and some of this is like us, you know, being a little bit upset that, we thought that this was going to be like this, but in the end it ends up like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it may just take a lot more time, you know? Like, Do you think, because like, what do you think about that thesis, right? Because I think that's the thing that gives me still hope in this area is that, you know, one day, you know, the dollar will collapse because all the fiat currencies die. They have an average lifespan of 40 years. The oldest one is 300 years, and that's the pound, and it's not doing that great, right? And the dollars, you know, the national debt has an interest rate is at 30 something trillion dollars. Mm-hmm. Interest rates are like 70%, like there, you know, 70% of what is it? The, you know, the tax revenue. 70% of the tax revenue goes to pay the interest on the debt, right? And so, and it is very quickly rising. So at some point, you know, at some point we'll have some great cataclysm, and both the dollar and tether will be not as interesting to people anymore, and
everybody will rush to install a Bitcoin wallet.
Yeah,
suddenly, because this is the only path, right? Yeah, and there is no other way that this thing could go. Yeah, others and everybody being like, okay, you know, let's just do Bitcoin. We can observe, like, you know, we have collapsing currencies happening in the world. And, you know, we talked about Argentina and there's other places where we have big inflation. So we can observe, like, is Bitcoin adoption bigger there? Yes. Is it 10x bigger? Yeah. Okay. But is it, you know, 20% of society? No. Okay. So it's somewhere in between, right? And it's,
right.
10 times more than in a Western country without the inflation, but it's still a niche subset of the population. So I don't know, like in the end, something like Bitcoin, nobody knows which way it's going to go. Who knows, like it is possible that, you know, the ETF version of Bitcoin wins out and that eventually all of the Bitcoins end up in ETFs, yeah. And people use something else for their internet money needs, but in some ways like I think the cat's out of the bag.
Yeah,
like if it is stability, like who knows, there's also the question of like what happens when we reach a certain level of stability with Bitcoin, like what happens when, you know, I mean, my dream for Bitcoin is to when the hype cycles end, and we just have like a very, very slow appreciation of value, you know, like a reverse inflation.
Yeah,
but like so you know, you can save it in a 12. It's not exciting. It doesn't go up and down. Not a penny stock. Yeah, it's just nice and stable. Maybe in that world, things like stable coins will actually be less relevant to people. And maybe we kind of start seeing that with the recent development, at least in the early stage. So who knows? At the same time, like, I don't know that. And again, like, if you read the Satoshi White paper, like, it doesn't talk about building a lifeboat next to the Titanic, right? That came later in the Bitcoin community. Rather, he's talking about, well, peer-to-peer internet currency, so you can pay stuff over the internet like you do with coins in a vending machine. Like, he talks about that sort of things. And so, yeah, who knows? Maybe that's the direction in which it goes. I think a certain type of people will always fight to defend the right of people to make financial transactions through the act of cryptographic signature, which I think is the essence of this innovation, and which specific flavor it takes. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think you're right that the peer to peer sort of, or at least the use of Bitcoin as a currency is kind of a fundamental thing, right? Like if that just died out, you know, it wouldn't be good. It definitely wouldn't be good. It might be enough for me to like kind of, you know, call it a day type of thing. Because, and I don't know, I mean, we'll see what happens when we get there. But like, yeah, I do think that we need to, that might be the thing that that those of us that are true believers, so to speak, right, we need to sort of continue to defend and continue to sort of hold ground that is like, yeah, you should be able to spend it, even if you're not going to, because it maybe doesn't make financial sense to do it, because maybe you have a fiat job, you know, and why are you going to buy it and pay 2%, 3% to buy it to go pay 3% to sell it, you know, it like makes no sense.
Right. Shouldn't.
Yeah. You know, except for when it makes sense.
It's not a guarantee. You know, like in the history of computing, there's been many battles between open and closed, right? And it's not a law of nature that open systems always win, right? Like, say, Linux on a desktop. Like, well, it's a small niche, Linux on a desktop. We do have Android. Yeah, and we do have most Apple systems are based on a BSD type system, which is a Unix variant similar to Linux, right? So, yeah, in some kind of bastardized form, it does reach a lot of people, but it ends up being in a way that the older enthusiasts are unhappy about, right? Yeah, or like the file sharing enthusiasts. Yeah, right. They're probably, I'm guessing that the old BitTorrent maximalists are maybe not super happy about the fact that, Spotify and Netflix ended up winning out. Yeah, well, since society is working well and people are happy with the setup, and great, so to speak. So, like, I think that it's still very worthwhile to work for achieving the future that we would like to see. I guess that is the unreasonable visionary side of it that we kind of need to a little bit try to build for a world.
Yeah, and Bitrefill is, you know, I think the most widespread and, you know, let's say robust path to spending Bitcoin. You know, I don't think there's anything remotely close, right? Will we continue to see this for many years? I mean, I think you are holding a line that's really important with Bitrefill. I personally use it regularly. It's saved me many times, right? How are you feeling about the future? Like, where do you see, let's say, the future of Bitrefill? Given, like, let's say these sort of facts about the market that I think we are starting to kind of wrestle with and accept.
Well, I think that the future is quite bright. Like, as you say, we have a certain leadership in terms of things that you can actually buy with Bitcoin and with other types of internet money. It's a leadership that we intend to maintain, even as the group of people that are buying stuff with money grows by several orders of magnitude, because it is the small fraction of the world population that is using internet money on a regular basis like that. Yeah, so we are seeing this growth, and we are, we are definitely lifted by things like the price of Bitcoin going up. I think from our standpoint, we're going to continue with what has been our success factor, which is, talking to the customers, learning about where they are, what the use cases are, what pain points we're solving, and doing it better. And over time, like as we grow, as the space grows, as all of these things grow, Bitrefill will probably look quite different to people than it does today. Yeah, right. I think in the end, it's going to be more of a tighter integrated experience, let's say. Yeah, more of a one-stop shop for all of your day-to-day cryptocurrency usages. And that's the future that we're working toward. One brick at a time.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's probably going to be a generational dimension to it too, right? Like, I think, our parents, it's still kind of an arcane technology to them. But like, to me, it's a native technology, and my children or our children will probably be have it as a native technology. So, I to some degree, I think
For sure.
there's a question of time,
Well, I mean, there's Bitcoin is what, 15 years now? So there's people that are 15 years old, not so young, that have never lived in a world without Bitcoin. So yeah, definitely. And I mean, end of the day, you were saying something in the beginning of this chat, that it is like, in a lot of ways, a simpler and a smoother experience because this is how like things should work, right? Yeah, and I think that, especially with younger people, they're going to be finding it very, very convoluted, finding out like, why is it that I can't actually buy a thing? Why do I need to have three different apps to sign in to make sure that that my payment goes through in a safe way, and all of these things. Like, why can't I just transfer value to somebody with a click of a button? I mean, like, I was small story. Like, I was in a good co-working space, where I am right now, and their only payment method that they accepted was bank transfer over IBAN. Like, and so at the time, that meant writing an invoice, taking a pinky swear that I'd promise that I would pay this when I get the chance, logging into the internet bank, like typing in an international receipt payment, like old,
Jesus.
and like, yeah, why can't you just show me your QR code, and I will scan it, and we will be done. We'll move on with our day.
Yeah. I mean, I think that to me, that's one of the most hopeful dynamics, right? It's like, in a world where, we're competing directly with fiat on just base user case, like user interface, right? Let's say we get to that place where Bitcoin stops, doing a 30, like 30% average a year, and just does like 30, 10% average growth a year, or let's say 15% growth a year, while fiat currencies are continuing to collapse 10% a year. So we're just like, we're still better than them, but it's not that, it's not like a huge gamble, right? Like, it's not like you're gonna get rich, right? It's just gonna make you not get poor slowly, right? In that world, we're still competing with a banking interface where you got to give them all this information every time you make a transaction, right? Like, even the credit card payment side of things, right? I mean, I think in the developed world, it's a little bit easier. Like, a lot of things get more automated. But in Latin America, like, every time you put a credit card, it's like all this information, right? Like, name, da 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 da. It takes like 5 minutes to fill it out, right? We definitely have a better user experience than that, right? Like, way better.
Exactly. And curious about this thing, you're saying, like, when Bitcoin is no longer seen as this get rich quick thing. And I wonder, lately, I don't know the answer to it myself, but like, if you watch the latest meme coins taking off and all of that stuff, I don't know, I'm getting more and more feeling that Bitcoin is actually something quite different from those. I don't think that anybody who's participating like 6 years from in the past, Bitcoin or Ethereum, well, I don't know. Whereas like now it's like, yeah, well, there's Bitcoin and there's this Joe Biden coin, or the Wish dog. Pretty clear, I think, what the difference is, right? And it's not that someone who bought the Wish dog token was actually looking for a sound money alternative, such as Bitcoin, but was just confused by the landing page of the exchange that they went to. Like, no, they wanted specifically to play in this decentralized Ponzi casino. For them, they have those tokens, and there is also this Bitcoin thing. Yeah, that is kind of on the side, right? Because the currency of the casino is stable coins, right? So when you if you win, if you lose on your jailbroken coin, well then you lose. But if you win, then I guess you cash it out into stable coins.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's why I think it's important to pay attention to that economy and all of the things and tools and utilities that are growing there, and make sure that Bitcoin interplays a good way with those things
Yeah.
and tries to be the common ground, like the common language. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean the argument should not be like don't gamble on meme coins, you know? Like, yeah, okay, it meme coins are gambling, you know. Clearly, like there is no pretense anywhere around any meme coin except maybe Dogecoin, right? That they are anything other than like a meme coin, literally, right? And memes come and go, right? And they will, you know, they'll rise and fall, and everybody knows that. And everybody's it's just like honest Ponzi schemes, right? And at least they're honest, right? At least they're honest. There's definitely been a conversation, like a transformation, in this space where they're not trying to build the next Bitcoin. No, they're just a meme coin. It's just a dog with a hat attached to a coin, you know. And maybe the pitch that Bitcoiners, you know, those of us that go to the conferences, you know, what we need to say is like, wow, you're a shitcoiner. No. It's like, wow, make sure you get some profits. Make sure you take profits and put it into Bitcoin, you know, because that meme coin will one day die, and Bitcoin is likely to stay here and hold its value, right? Or some other sort of more strategic, you know, and less aggressive stance. I mean, again, like I think there's some people who do deserve that aggression from the Bitcoiners, but a lot of these new people, they're like they are aware of Bitcoin, but they hear, you know, I mean, that it.
I think that this is the new the miss, right? Because they often hear things like what we're saying, and then they're like, "Okay, now we push shitcoins to people," and like, yeah, I don't think that you need to go to that level. Like, I don't think people should play with shitcoins. Yeah, I'm definitely not going to encourage them doing that. I don't think anybody else should. It's just a question of like making sure, even though we don't like it, that our internet money is interoperable with their internet money.
Yeah, you know, like, yeah, I think it's also easy to forget that a lot of people just have no context, you know. I met and maybe I'll finish with this because I'm sure you're very busy. I don't want to take up all your time, even though I think we could continue talking and enjoying it. But I met an Ethereum guy in Colombia, and this guy's like really technical. Like he really understands the Ethereum world. You know, like all these different swap dexes and stuff that to me like make me feel old, you know. You know, like I really should know how they work, but like he really understands them, right? And we get to talking, and then, you know, and I'm like saying how I like Bitcoin a lot more and how there's things that I don't like about Ethereum. And we start talking about the history of both of these coins. And he had no idea about a great deal of Bitcoin's history and even of Ethereum's history. You know, he was just in it in the depth of the tech, right? With some very vague knowledge of the history. And by the end of the conversation, you know, in like a week or two later, he's like, yeah, you know what? I'm starting to buy a lot more Bitcoin because, yeah, you're right. This is a whole different beast, right? So a lot of people that are in the crypto world, so to speak, they just haven't had a maxi or a Bitcoiner like sit down with them and just kind of teach them, you know, and guide them and be like, yeah, you know, all this DeFi stuff is okay, I guess, right? But you understand the fundamentals are pretty rough, right? And like we have this other thing over here that's actually amazing, right? Like that's actually really strong, right? And you can always just get some of it, you know, like hedge, right? Like you know what I mean? Like I think we need to become a little bit more diplomatic at this point.
Yeah, probably. Exactly like that.
Awesome. Is there anything else that I should go ahead?
No, I mean, just
Yeah.
to add to it, like, you know, I remember when Ethereum launched and, you know, we had a very strong ethos community that pre-mines are bad and so on. Definitely violated that ethos, right? And for that reason, the people that were around, they were like, but that said, Well, somebody who is using Ethereum today for whatever purposes, and it is helping them achieve financial empowerment, achievement of goals, things like that. Like, that person is not our enemy, I think. Or at least in my view, it's not.
I agree.
That is a person that is using a wallet, that is being self-sovereign, and so on. It happens to prefer a coin with slightly different name than the coin that I happen to prefer.
Yeah.
Okay, so be it.
Yeah.
Let's just make sure that my coin can be swapped with his coin, and that the maximum amount of freedom is enabled for me and for him.
Yeah, it's a potential customer, you know. It's a potential Bitcoiner.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Is there anything else that you think that the Bitcoin community should sort of, you know, let's say, consider or contemplate, or any other question that I should have asked you that I haven't asked you that you would like to communicate? Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. But I think it's a good point to end on.
Yeah.
I think we had a good chat.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it, Sergey. I really appreciate you coming on.
Always.
I'm really grateful that we have Bitrefill, because it's a great place to buy everything you want, pretty much. Again, you can buy a fridge on Bitrefill. I don't know if you knew this, but you can. You know, I've seen it done. You know, I did my groceries on Bitrefill the other day. I, you know, bought like a $400 gift card and then went into groceries and saved like 10%, which is pretty dope. Yeah. You know, so yeah, if you're already all in on Bitcoin and you know you need a new tire for your car, there's probably a way you can buy it with Bitrefill. So definitely go check it out. And for those that never used it, if you use the code Bitcoin News, you know, one word Bitcoin News, you get 10% sats back. So we're over here trying to make you money, you know, might as well take it, right?
Sweet.
All right. Thank you, Sergey.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Kron. Yeah, and then fun chat. Keep doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you too. Please keep doing what you're doing, Sergey. And thank you, everybody, for joining us.